You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your host tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You're just going to listen to the Hot Texas Swing Band.
Yes, and we so appreciate them allowing us, Alex Dormont and the band. We get to play this great music at the beginning and end of every show. Yeah. So let's see. Thank you for joining us for episode 186.
That's it? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And who are we?
We said Jim and Bobby Bell.
and we're
going to be talking to Charlie Amos tonight.
Yes, we're going to be talking to Charlie. We are so excited. We read two fabulous books this week. Let me see if I can hold them up sort of in order. We started with On the Scout, and then we were Call in the Dogs. Welcome, Charlie.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Where are you joining us from tonight, Charlie?
I am about halfway between Rocky Ford and Bull Holler in the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma.
Well, welcome. And Jim, where are we broadcasting from tonight?
Well, I have this little blurb, I'll tell you. We're at the base of the Ozark Mountains in a wooded area. It's 1889. We've been told that we need to find a place to drill a well for water. They gave us this funny-looking stick to find water. It sort of looks like a big slingshot. They call it a divining rod. I don't know what to do. I guess we need to call the great backwoodsman Charlie Amos for help.
Okay.
Look, Charlie, we really enjoyed these books. And again, I'll be holding them up throughout the evening. But we start with On the Scout. Let's try to get it holding up straight. On the Scout. This is the first of the Green Country series. And then we will move right into Call in the Dogs, book two. And we are so excited. These are great books. You need them. If you're watching or listening, you need to have them on your must-read list. And tell us a little bit about Charlie.
A bio.
Yeah.
Joe Amos. Raised in the shadow of the ridges of the Ozark Plateau, Charlie listened carefully to stories of outlaw gangs from the Prohibition days and cowboy adventures on the open range, which lasted until the 1940s in this area. Cherokee residents still whisper the tales of spirit animals and evil forces. Veterans of foreign wars and domestic feuds speak low of battles fought and some still waging. An area rich in history and characters are surely bound to produce storytellers. Charlie Amos is one of those storytellers.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
What a storyteller he is. So just to get started, Charlie, tell us a little bit more about your background, maybe a little bit about growing up, a little bit about your education.
So I was very fortunate to be raised in what's called the Ozarks. Mm. This part of Oklahoma is right at the edge of the Ozarks. My mother was a librarian, and I grew up reading books, playing on creeks and the ridges. So books and just as common as fish hooks and shotgun shells for me growing up. After high school, went on to Oklahoma State University, studied agriculture, graduated from there. And then after that, my resume kind of resembles a rap sheet. I spent some time in Mexico. I interned down there with the Chihuahua Cattlemen's Union. So I got to work right alongside some Mexican vaqueros, studied history in Puebla, Mexico. And then after that, worked in forestry, trucking. I drove a truck for a number of years, long haul trucker, taught school. I've done about everything but be a cop.
That's quite a background.
It is. It is.
You know, you use the term, which I kind of like, truck stop professors. Mm. How did that come about? A lot of philosophers out there.
There are a lot of philosophers out there if you listen. So I feel like I've been lucky. I've worked most of my life outside with crews. So whether it's with cowboys or tree trimming crews, equipment operators or truck drivers, I think that's helped me in my writing, because I've learned to develop an ear for dialogue, and they're the best teachers out there. A truck driver or a dozer operator or an old cowboy, they're better than having a PhD.
Well, that can't be true. How did you get your first truck driving job? How did that occur? Did you go looking for it, or somebody said, "Hey, I need a driver"?
Well, at that time, I felt like I needed a life change, and I had a CDL, and it was easier for me to make money with a CDL than it was a college degree. CDL being a commercial driver's license. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I actually lied on my resume, because they wouldn't hire me as a trucker in some places if they seen I had a college degree. So I kind of left it off the resume, and they were desperate and they hired me. And then I spent the next few years hauling frozen and fresh meat across the United States, and then later on, Little Debbie snack cakes.
Oh my gosh. So when you were saying that your mom was a librarian and you were always reading books, did you have a favorite writer or two that you just had to read?
I did. My mother was a big Elmer Kelton fan, and I became a big Elmer Kelton fan. And another writer that he wrote about the Ozarks, Douglas C. Jones, excellent writer. Mm. And then Charles Portis, which he only wrote 5 books, but what a good 5 books he wrote.
Exactly. True Grit being one of them. To our listeners who maybe, I think we probably all know, but sometimes, you know, we maybe know the movie. We don't know who wrote it. We don't, you know, so yes.
Shout it out.
Yeah. True Grit. Absolutely. let's see, how long or at what point were you always writing, or at what point did writing really take hold for you?
I probably started writing when I was about 4. I remember writing, making my own books and writing about a cow dog, which at a young age, I read Hank the Cow Dog by John Erickson, which I think most country kids do. But, I didn't get paid for anything that I wrote until I was 40. And it was magazine article. And I owe a great deal to Oklahoma Cowman magazine. They kind of gave me the confidence to take this next leap forward and get into fiction and writing books.
Yeah,
so it took me a while. It took me from 4 to 40 before I took the initiative.
Yeah, I think a lot of our past guests have started that same way, either with magazines or with newspapers like Johnny Boggs and others. And it's always interesting how, you know, you're able to make the switch, really, really get the bug and make the switch. I know you have a question.
We're going to ask a writing style. Yeah. Are you, do you plan it out, have an outline, or have it all planned, or are you kind of more from the seat of your pants? What kind of approach do you take?
I tend to have a plot. I'm not organized enough to really have an outline, but I tend to have a plot, and I will use index cards and write, you know, notes to myself, and I'll have scenes that I will put on a like a cork board, and I'll sit and stare at that cork board and think, okay, I'm here. How do I get to there? And then I follow the plot, but I never know what's going to happen. And that's probably amateurs, but I just, sometimes these characters surprise me. And
Yeah.
I understand. Well, a lot of writers kind of They just announce they're writing. They don't have a plot either. They may not have a plot. They
have an
might not
idea.
have an outline
Yeah,
either.
they have an idea.
When do you write? Do you have a scheduled writing program? Do you get up in the morning and write, or you just,
Well,
you do a few chores and then decide, okay, I got an idea.
so I write when I can. I waited late to have children, so I'm raising children and cattle along with working full time. So I write early in the morning, sometimes late at night. That On the Scout, I wrote a good portion of it sitting in a cafe, just the Green Gate Grill in Twin Oaks, Oklahoma. I'd sit in a back booth, and the waitresses would keep me stocked with tea, and I would sit there and punch out stuff while I was, waiting to go work.
Well, that's good. And the surrounding noise and other customers didn't bother you?
No, it's kind of
Okay.
background noise. And I listen to music now when I write.
Okay.
I have a Spotify account, so I find making a playlist like a Western movie theme songs and soundtracks. I kind of like that, and
Okay, that's
I've
cool.
got a list I listen to, and it's I find it helps me.
That's fun.
Very good. When
That's
Bobby
fun.
does a lot of work, she's got the TV blasting away. I can't do anything
It's
in
his
front of the TV.
background.
I have to go hide in the office someplace.
Yeah, I either have music or TV. I don't know. It just, I don't really pay attention. I miss a lot. If they're speaking a foreign language all of a sudden, I have no idea what's going on. Or if it's something like Mission Impossible and there's nothing, and like an old Mission Impossible, you have to be really watching or you have no idea what's going on. Oh, that's fun. Let's see. You had made a fun comment the other day that cowboys and others that do sort of work by them find themselves working alone a lot. There is some benefits or not to that. Something about, if you're talking to yourself, tell us a little bit about
Sure. I think
that.
was talking about people occupations where you work alone. Eventually you start talking to yourself. Definitely will sing to yourself maybe, but sooner or later you start to talk to yourself or talk to your horse or your dog. And truckers are no exception. They talk to themselves. They scream at the radio. I think that's why talk radio is so popular among truck drivers.
Yeah. And before we take our first little break, I'd just like to ask, these books are so rich with Oklahoma landscape and such. How has living in Oklahoma, if you would, inform your writing?
I treat the land like a character. Most of the places, well, all the places, if I write about it exists. You can go there right now, if it's not on private property. So, when I taught geography, one of the things I taught my students is how geography influences culture, and I think that's true across the country. You look at, Eastern Oregon versus Western Oregon, two different types of people, and the country has a lot, the land has a lot to do with that. So definitely in Oklahoma, the land influences the people.
We are going to take a quick break, Charlie. Are you a writer? Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. And we know that a lot of you, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison friends, are probably watching tonight. So we are going to do a big shout out from Charlie and us to say thank you for watching. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for comments you might be leaving on Facebook Rendezvous, which we'll see later. We really appreciate your support and being here with us. Here's a special offer created just for you. When we come back, we'll hear a little bit of a song, Oklahoma Hills, and we'll talk more with our special guest author, Charlie Amos. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page, starting at $369. BlueBookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Way down yonder in the Indian Nation, I rode my pony on the reservation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born. Way down yonder in the Indian Nation, a cowboy's life is my occupation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born. Many months have come and gone since I wandered from my home in those Oklahoma hills where I was born. Though a page of life has turned, many a lesson I have learned, yet I feel like in those hills I still belong. Way down yonder in the Indian Nation, I rode my pony on the reservation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born. Way down yonder in the Indian Nation, a cowboy's life is my occupation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born.
Back from Underwood the Writer. We're talking to Charlie Amos, and you just been listening to Oklahoma Hills. That was sung by Gene Autry. Didn't you tell me it recorded in 46?
Yeah, it was released in 45, written by Woody Guthrie, a co-write with his brother.
Yeah.
And the recording we heard, this is my favorite singing cowboy, Gene, and it was recorded in 1946. Mm-hmm. And then we read that in 2001, it was adopted as the state's
state's
song. Yeah. Isn't that fun?
That's one of my favorites.
Us too, Charlie.
It's got a nice sound to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice sound to it.
So let's see.
We're going to talk about two books from the Green Country, right?
Yes. We're going to start with a little bit sort of about the series in general. So we're talking about On the Scout and Calling the Dogs. And we're going to talk first a little bit about the series overall. What are you going to, what's your first question?
You know, you folks in Oklahoma, you know, in the backwoods there, you got some sayings I never heard of before. And you got some translations you'll have to talk to us about. So, On the Scout, what does that mean?
So On the Scout is it's an old term. For this area, that meant if you were on the scout, you're out dodging the law. That meant the law was after you. So you hit the woods or the back prairies. You was on the lam. You were running from the sheriff or the federals, but basically meant you were living on the scout, constantly on the lookout for.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, how about calling the dogs?
Book two is Call in the Dogs.
Yeah, Calling the Dogs is fox hunters, wolf hunters, whenever they would run dogs and they had trail hounds, and toward the end of the hunt, when the fox would go to ground, somebody would usually say, put out the fire, calling the dogs, let's go on back to the house. So Calling the Dogs, as we find in this second book, if you're familiar with the series, it's about going home, and our characters, they go home, especially the Levi character, or Little Kansas, as he's called. He finds his home. So
it's just so fun. And your dialogue is, we'll talk about dialogue probably in a minute, but your dialogue is so fun. And there are some sayings throughout. They're not, you know, it's not overwhelming, but we can hear that these characters have some, I don't think it's slang, I'm not sure what, they have some ways of speaking that I wish we were more colorful. I wish we had colorful things like that in our vocabulary these days.
Well, I heard Elmer Kelton give a talk one time, talked about using that type of language in your writing, and you don't want to use too much, just enough, like salt in the beans. You want just enough to add the flavor, but not enough to ruin the pot.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I try to do that.
We have a friend with Oklahoma roots that will often say cool beans, and not overly. But the first time I heard it, I had to say, What is that you just said? And I do find that I do like to put that in my vocabulary, especially with people that I don't know, and they do the same thing to me. They're like, what's that mean? You
know? Yeah. Well, I've heard cool beans. I didn't know it was Oklahoman, but we'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take it.
There you go.
Okay, honey, let's get moving. I'm talking about book one, specifics about book one.
Okay, well, that's a scout. That's right up in the warm. Kind of what's the storyline a little bit without giving too much away here.
So on the scout, it's really about a very volatile time in what would become Oklahoma. You had just before statehood in 1889, about two decades before statehood, you had the closing of the open range, closing of the way of life, cowboy way of life, and you had the homesteaders that came in, the land run. And there's been a lot of great stories told about the land run, but very few have told it from the perspective of the cowboys and the Native Americans that was living and operating there. And that's what this does. It follows a full-blood Cherokee cowboy and a Jewish immigrant from Poland, who, when he comes to the United States, he ultimately finds work as a cowboy, which oftentimes cowboying was an entry-level job. It required skill sets, but if you were willing to work, there was people willing to hire you.
Well, they are a remarkable pair. And they worked together for the same cow outfit, and that's kind of how they met. But these two are so entertaining, and their relationship is, I think, so unique. Levi, how do you say his last name? Is it Karatowski?
Yeah,
that is okay. Mm-hmm. And he does go by Little Kansas. He's 5'2", I think. Yeah. And then his partner, his good buddy, is Turon Turtle. Tell us a little bit about these two and the relationship that they have. It's dynamic and special, that relationship.
So like you said, Levi is 5'2" and Turon is a foot taller than he is, but they're both kind of outsiders. Turon gets judged based on how he looks. He's a full blood Cherokee. So he faces prejudice based on how he looks. Levi, he faces prejudice as soon as he opens his mouth. He's little, he talks funny. You know, he's learned English by working with cowboys. But the two are really outsiders, and they have two very different goals that they are wanting to get, but they find that working together, they're able to accomplish those goals. And they learn to depend on one another.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're talking about the book's basically a fiction, but I think that character, Levi, was, you modeled him after a real person, I think, right?
Was. Levi, so the town of Kansas, Oklahoma, which there is a town called Kansas, it was founded after a Jewish peddler. And all we know is that he was short of stature. Nobody could pronounce his name. His the goods that he sold out of his wagon came from Kansas City, so they called him Little Kansas. It was they called the place where he set up his trading post Little Kansas City, and then it was ultimately dropped to Little Kansas, and now just Kansas. But one knows what happened to him. He founded a trading post, an area, and then disappeared in real life.
They each also have goals, which I really enjoyed about the book. Is they're not drifters. They become released from the cow outfit they were working with because the rancher sold off everything, and kind of paid them off, and said to each one of the cowboys, you know, here's your final pay, and then I'll give you $40 or a horse. You choose, you know, what you want to do. And some of the group just sort of drifted, and we kind of followed them a little bit. But these two, well, they sort of start on their own, don't they? But then they do end up together.
Dude, not to give away anything, but they part ways thinking they'll never see each other again. You know, the young Levi, he takes the $40. He's going to take a train ticket to Kansas City, to where he's going to set up. You know, he hopes to find work in a grocery store or a store. But as what happens when we make plans, sometimes things change. Yeah. It is definitely change. No fault of his own, other than bad with bad company.
Yep. And guilty by association, sort of. Oh, yeah. And and Turan finds him, and they begin their journey together, which is just a remarkable story. There is in this story, there is conflict on most pages. You give us a little respite here and there. We celebrate a Sabbath, and Levi hadn't done that in a long time. But, you know, you give us a reader, you give us a little moment here and there to kind of relax. But you do give us very interesting and I would say a surprising sort of conflicts, and they work their way through them, don't they?
They do. You know, the Tron character is very smart. He's very cunning. And so is Levi, only he has some confident issues. But yeah, there is conflict on every page, whether it's the landscape, the people they meet, the fact that there's a drought, and they're trying to find a way through a landscape to find enough forage for their animals. But yeah, there's conflict in human form, animal form, and then just the land itself and weather.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking yesterday, and maybe this morning, I was thinking about the characters. You know, these are good people, but they're all poor. They're all struggling, and they work. And a lot of times, they work together, you know, for a common goal. But because they got goals they're trying to achieve. But life's not really necessarily easy.
No.
Yeah. Well, and Turan, he had a dream. He had a goal, didn't he? He was and he knew he was going to need finances. He was going to have money in his hand. And while others would, you know, go into town over the last couple of years, he's really stayed focused, didn't he? I thought that was an unusual characteristic for a working cowboy at that time.
Yeah, and Turan is not your average day worker. I mean, he has goals. He's Cherokee. He's come from a fairly, I'm not going to say rich family, but a prominent family, a good family background. But he has a goal. He wants to bring a Hereford bull back to the Cherokee Nation and start a ranch. And the older cattleman that he works for is kind of a mentor and kind of guides him in, you know, a letter of introduction. And that's what his plan is. He goes to get a bull and take it back. And at that time, there were no Hereford bulls really in that part of the world. By that ambitious was.
Well, let's shift gears now, because we want to make sure we get a little time to talk about book two, Call in the Dogs. So you gave us a little bit of where the title comes from. But again, what's kind of a short storyline for this one?
So our hero thinks his excitement's over and he's finally going to achieve his goal, but an old adversary resurfaces to challenge that. And he is forced to deal with something that he thought was long, long past him.
Yep.
And there's a little romance too.
Yes, there is. And they have really, though, found home. And it's fun to sort of see how Turan and his wife are developing home in an area where his family is. And then we experience Levi, but Levi is driven, isn't he? He's got a goal. And even though he has something following him, he's not going to be deterred, is he?
No. And like Jim mentioned, they didn't have a whole lot of money, and they work hard to get what they got. And I think these stories, the harder the characters work, maybe the stronger somebody wants to take away from them. But still, those people who try to get it easy, it don't always work out for them. So but they do work hard.
Yeah. There's a scene in this book with a character named Tall Mall, I think, is in there in an ice cream parlor. That was such a surprise. Just tell us a little bit about that scene because it was so fun.
Oh, for me, it was real fun. I love the Tall character. And it kind of dawned on me, I really based him on somebody from childhood. One of my brother's friends, he that my brother worked with, was a great to he might not have been that big, but when you're 5 years old, everybody's tall.
That's true. That's
And
true.
he had a big beard when nobody had beards hardly. But I really based a lot of that character on him and the Tall character. He's a fun guy. He's a jokester. He's a big guy and he loves ice cream. And there was an ice cream parlor in Siloam Springs, Arkansas at that time. So whenever he gets a chance, he goes there and he sticks out because he's a great big guy. He's wearing homemade clothes. Levi is a little bitty guy. Even one of the townspeople make a comment when they're walking down the sidewalk, like, is the circus in town? Because because you got this giant and this little bitty guy. And they go into this ice cream parlor and everybody stops and stares. And there's a little kid that was just, it was a fun scene to write. Like the little boy's reaction to seeing Tall and the mother who's embarrassed by what the little boy says. It's anybody that's been in a cafe with children has experienced that.
Yeah, and he's a fun character, Tall Mall. Is I don't think he's in book one, is he? He's
I know.
no, he's in book two. Yeah, he's in
He's
book two.
funny
He's a
too.
lot of fun. And there is another scene, and Jim alluded to it in the very beginning. We talked about where we are. Do you want to ask about that scene?
Finding water.
Finding water.
Yes, that so in downtown Kansas, Oklahoma, there is a hand dug well in the exact same location that's in the book. Now its origins not exactly, maybe similar to what's in Calling the Dogs, but yeah, there's a well exist and it was dug in a very similar way to what's in the book. And we meet the two twins, Toe and Lee, who remind me of people I grew up with, that it was fun to write. It was fun to do it.
We're talking, and I was thinking, it's been decades since I had any conversation with anybody about a divining rod. But when I was a kid, that wasn't you heard that. That wasn't that unusual. And
No,
so you always knew somebody that knew somebody that could find water.
there's one old man in every community who wants a peach tree limb and he'll find water and people drill wells where he tells you to.
We're
gonna.
And then the scientific community says, no,
Oh, I know. Yeah.
that can't happen.
We're going to step away for just a moment to tell you about one of the places you can order the books of many of our author guests, including Charlie Amos. Find their books on the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. When we come back, we'll hear a little bit of a very popular folk song, Barbara Allen. More with Charlie when we come back. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
'Twas in the merry month of May. The green buds were a-swelling. Sweet William on his deathbed lay for the love of Barbara Allen. Oh, yes, you're sick and very sick, and death is on you dwelling. like a dove bell knelling, and every tone it seemed to say, hard-hearted Barbara Allen. Oh father, go dig my grave, go dig it long and narrow. Sweet William died for me for love, I'll die for him for sorrow.
We just been listening to the song Barbara Allen. It was performed by Crystal Gayle from her album Music of the Wild West.
That's such a great song. So Charlie, how does this song fit into the second book?
Well, there is a lady you'll meet when you read Calling the Dogs named Molly. She was fun. She was fun to meet. I needed one woman for 5 minutes, and then I couldn't get her to go away. She was very loud mouthed, very vocal. She doesn't like men real well. But yeah, she will say whenever she drinks, she gets very loud and sings. And that's one of the songs that she's singing when one of our heroes is, trying to find the bad guy, comes across her singing and talking to the mules.
Molly O'Brien. Everyone needs a Molly O'Brien in their life, right?
I think every community has a Molly O'Brien if they
right.
if they look very close.
Well,
you have a favorite question, and I think he's probably kind of answered
it. Shirley kind of hit on it earlier, but your characters ever surprise you?
Yes, the blue tape character, Molly. Wow. Molly's man, he's a bad guy, but soon as that one scene, I don't want to give much away, but when he takes time to pet the dog on the top of the head, I couldn't hate him after that, because he just done a bad thing, but he took time to scratch a dog behind the ear, and then that was his redemption arc from then on. So yeah. I could have easily, seen him get killed, but now I want him to make it. I want him to turn his life around.
Well, and I think Blue Tate's a good example of even someone who's not always making the right decisions, or is making poor decisions, or is, appears to be not very good, almost like a villainish, there's another dimension.
Right.
And I think that also makes characters very real on the page when an author shows us that.
Do you enjoy writing dialogue? Because there is a lot of dialogue in your books.
I do. I had to learn to write dialogue. Yeah. I mean, writing dialogue is scary for me, or it was, and I'm still trying to figure it out. But I think a dialogue driven, and I think screenwriters like Larry McMurtry, a lot of his books, they work so perfect in the screen, but he was a screenwriter. So they learned to write, they're dialogue driven. And really, I like telling the story through dialogue rather than me, a narrator's voice saying, so the hills were green, and let the characters tell you the hills are green,
But, yes, we learned a lot through the dialogue, I think, as readers. We learned about candied walnuts, and we learned about what actually goes in a saddlebag, and we learned all kinds of things because they're talking about it, or they're saying, well, I'm going to take this, I'm packing this, or they're going through that landscape. And James Wade, we interviewed a few weeks ago with his book Narrow the Road, and the landscape, like your landscape, is so touchable, and we go through that, and we can taste it, we can feel it, we can smell it, and it is like a character in the story. And your landscape is the same way, and the characters are talking about it or teaching about it, or hey, do that, oh, let's bury that turkey in the mud, let's
mm-hmm. you learned a new cooking method, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did.
I never tried that.
And a lot of your dialogue is also humorous, and that is also how we get to know the characters. How Is there a tip for writing humor? Is it just come to you, Charlie? Does it, how does it reveal itself to you?
I think it helps growing up with a lot of smart alecks. But I think it goes back to me working outside on crews or with crews. You take working men and women that work together. They make fun of each other all the time. There's always those zingers. And I think as a writer, you need to put yourself in those places, whether it's at a cafe and you're eavesdropping or you're doing weekend work. I think you just need to listen to people talk and just have that ear and just listen for it. Life needs to be fun. It's too hard. So you have to make it fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you read your dialogue out loud, or do you have, you know, does your wife or a writing partner or anybody, do you say, listen to this, is this funny? Or, you know, do you get feedback?
So I started reading it out loud to go when I go back through, like when I'm writing, I don't, but when I go back, I read it. It is challenging though, writing about different types of characters, with different cultural backgrounds and from different parts of the country. It's important to stay true to their voice. And that's one thing that if I'm not careful, I don't want my dialogue to, I don't want every character to speak Charlie Amos. I want, you know, I try to, I have to catch myself. Like,
got you.
No, that's what I say, but she wouldn't say that, or he wouldn't say that.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of characters,
characters.
We've talked about some of them, but one we haven't talked about yet is Ruth. What's Ruth like?
Yeah, tell us about Ruth.
Ruth, she is Teron's sister. She's full-blood Cherokee. She is very outspoken. She's a very strong, independent girl. She knows what she wants. And in this case, she decides she wants Levi.
Yes. Very clear. Very clear.
And I saw that play out as a high school teacher. Sometimes when a girl wants a certain boy, he doesn't stand a chance.
Tell us about Marshall Colcord.
So Marshall Colcord was based on a real life U.S. Marshal, Charles Colcord, who... he got very lucky in real life, but in the book, we just meet him for a little bit. But I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't come back in maybe book 3 or 4, because the real life Marshall Colcord, even though he was a marshal where Teron and Levi cowboyed, he ultimately bought a ranch here in Green Country, and they named a town after him in real life, Colcord. So he'll be coming back.
All right, honey, call out a name.
Yeah.
Who do you want to hear about?
You need to get a couple old warriors that never say anything but have to know everything.
Right.
Breaking Glass and Wolf.
Yes, Breaking Glass and Wolf. I love those guys.
Yeah.
Once again, I just needed a couple guys for a scene, but then they would not go away. They never say much, but they're always there.
Yeah.
And I have an idea for a kind of a prequel based on their life going back early on, and when the Cherokees first came across on the Trail of Tears and they first started to get themselves established here, because those two old men and Ruth tells a little bit about them. She alludes to their history, and it kind of piqued my interest. I want to find out more about them.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, a lot of times we tell very important facts and things through the eyes or through the words of minor characters, which in many respects these guys are, because you never hear from them. But if you say too much about them, there's all sorts of spoiler alerts.
We can't.
Yeah.
So we can't even talk about them anymore.
But you could ask about Bill Kirby.
Bill Kirby.
He's in both books.
The bad guy.
Tell us just a little something about Bill Kirby.
So Bill Kirby, he really... he changes everything for Levi in book one. That one encounter, and Teron, it's Teron's fault, but he builds up Levi's reputation as something he's not. But his whole image is based on that one encounter with Bill Kirby. And he's glad it's over. Levi thinks he'll never have to deal with him again. But as we find out in the very first chapter of calling the dogs. Bill Kirby's not done, and he's got a score to settle.
So, listeners and watchers and readers, you have to have both books to find out the whole Wild Bill Kirby story. Well, I am looking at time, Charlie. This is just flowing, hasn't it? Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So everybody wants to know, how do we find you? How do we follow you? And how do we get the books?
So CharlieAmosBooks.com. You can follow me on Facebook. I'll try to put out updates. Next event will be in St. Louis. I'll be at the WWA. If any of you all will be there, you know, look me up. I'll have my name tag. But you can, of course, you can find my book on through y'all's website and online wherever good books are sold.
Yeah.
There you go.
Ask him what's next.
What's next?
Yeah.
Bobby has a problem, you see.
So the third book is, it is well on its way. We follow Teron's little and Ruth's little brother, Chuji. We see how Teron and Levi is made out, but the story really focuses on Chuji, and he's the right age to go with Theodore Roosevelt to Cuba during the Spanish War.
Rough Rider.
Which was 170 volunteers from Indian Territory that fought with Roosevelt in Cuba. So
that's going to be great. Yeah. Will you let us know when that's available, and will you make us be what do they call that? You know, advanced reader?
Yeah. I can do that.
Well, Jim, you have a quote.
We have a quote. It started out as a short quote, but I thought I'd read the whole passage. You know, in this conversation between, we've been talking about Teron Turtle, the tall Cherokee, and he's talking, obviously, to Levi, who we call Little Kansas. And they're actually talking about Turon's sister, Ruth. Levi says, "Would you run me off?" And Turtle says, "Heck no, Little Kansas. Just said you were like a brother. Now, Ruth doesn't feel the same way. If you turn her down, she may kill you. I will miss you, but in time, I'll get over it." And Levi says, "Marry Ruth or be killed. Are those my only options?" And Turtle says, "You can run, go to the sea, maybe give Australia a go." Levi says, "I made one voyage across the ocean. I'm not going to do another." And Turtle says, "We will bury you on the little rise to the northwest where you can look down on the store you built." And Levi says, "You and your sister must be working on this together. Does me being a Jew bother anyone?" And Turtle says, "I got a cousin in Tahlequah who married a man from Missouri. We don't hold it against him. You'll be fine."
And that particular passage was from Calling the Dogs, the second book in the series. Well, we want to thank you all so much for joining us for episode 186. You can catch the replay of the video on Rendezvous with a Writer Facebook page, LA Talk Radio YouTube page, and you'll catch the audio on Podbean. I'll be posting that later this evening. And then it's on all the major audio podcast platforms. We want to say a big thank you to LA Talk Radio's founder and our engineer and tonight's DJ, Sam Hassan. Our sponsors, of course, a big thank you to Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison and to the Hot Texas Swing Band. And a thank you to tonight's special guest, Charlie Amos. So fun to have you with us, Charlie. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
It was fun. Next month, we kick off June 2026. We can't believe it. And we start with our very first show features Henry Park, who's always with us the first Thursday of every month. We'll be talking movies. He's the author of the greatest Westerns ever made and the people who made them. And our very special guest joining us is two-time Emmy Award winner and writer and a phenomenal movie historian, Kirk Ellis. This book is one of the most talked about books right now, and we'll be talking with Kirk about his book. It's got a long title, They Kill People, Bonnie and Clyde, A Hollywood Revolution, and America's Obsession with Guns and Outlaws. We are deep into it, and Kirk, if you're listening, what an amazing book. And we're watching Bonnie and Clyde tomorrow night as part of our preparation for our talk next week. So, Jim, do you have a closing comment?
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
We'll keep reading.
And we'll keep reading. Charlie, we'll see you down the trail.
We'll see you later. Bye.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.